Hello, and welcome to the Preview Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting items from the current month's previews catalog.
This is the preview spotlight for June 2010. These items are going to start coming out in August 2010, and in some cases a bit later. They actually snuck in a couple of early solicitations this time around that I almost didn't notice, but we talked about on the previews call. As always, we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. We encourage people to send us clips either when they see the solicits online or when they get their copies of previews. We do this every month, and really these episodes are what you guys make of them.
Right, and I generally do create a thread where I consolidate pointers and links to every online solicit. That's usually around somewhere around the 20th of the month, let's say. That's usually around when the online solicits start happening. So, sometimes it's after it falls off the front page of Newsarama or Comic Book Resources or whatever site, it's sometimes difficult to find those, and I usually catch them the day they go up and make a link to them.
And I find that very helpful because, again, it's hard to find those things online sometimes. Okay, we're going to go from the front of previews to the back of previews, certainly not page by page. We're going to actually gloss over quite a few things because there's just so many things in previews. Starting us off in Dark Horse is a clip from our regular contributor, Damien. Let's listen to that.
Hey guys, it's Damien here with my first pick for the month, and this one's early on in actual previews on page 33, which is The Chronicles of Conan, Volume 20, Night of the Wolf and Other Stories. Now, I have to admit, I grew up sort of with Conan, but not reading the comics for it. And, that would be with the movies, the wonderful Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, things like that. I had the books for it as well. And occasionally I'd come across bits and pieces, be it like the small digest-sized Cull the Conqueror stuff that they had in black and white, which I sort of got into thinking it was Krull for some reason when I was a kid after seeing that movie. But, hey, I enjoyed it a lot better than the movie did, but that was another thing. Now, I actually got put onto the comics by Bob and John, actually, when they did the review of the actual two trades of Conan a while back, and that really got me into these stories, and I've been picking them up ever since. So I wanted to point this one out and also thank the guys for actually pointing them out to me, because I would never have read them otherwise. So this one's The Chronicles of Conan, Volume 20. It's going to be $18.99. 200 pages, and it's on page 33 from Dark Horse. Okay, I'll let you get back to the guys.
Now, we talked about that in a back issue spotlight quite a while ago.
Right.
But it was some good stuff.
Yeah, and basically Dark Horse is reprinting in these volumes. Damien's talking about the Marvel Comics run from the 70s, 80s, and eventually 90s, I think it ended. But it went quite a long time, over 200 issues, I believe, or around 200 issues anyway. And then they're also doing their new Conan stuff that's coming out, and they collect that in trade paperback as well as, this month they have issue 24 of their second volume of Conan coming out. So lots of Conan comics out there. Dark Horse is also reprinting. I don't know if it's solicited this month, but a lot of the Savage Sword of Conan, which to me is almost better than the color comics, because it was originally done in black and white, so the Marvel Essential DC Showcase style big volumes that they put out come out pretty much the same way that they were originally presented, because they were presented in black and white magazines. So if you like sword and sandal type of stuff, Conan is always a good choice.
Okay, next up, we've got a clip from Drew. Let's listen to that.
Hello, this is Drew Woodworth from the Killer Comics Podcast with my first pick of the month. First, I'd like to say thanks to John and Bob for letting everybody contribute to this. My first pick is from Dark Horse Comics. It's called Gear School. It's Volume 2. I picked Volume 1 up in San Diego in 2008, and it is written by Adam Gallardo, and the pencils are by Nuria Paris, and Sergio Sandoval, and Estudio Phoenix. And basically what this book is, I think the best way to describe it is it's kind of like Robotech meets The Initiative. Basically, there's a war against aliens, and there's all these big sort of Robotech-type mechs, and there's all these young kids who are basically in school being trained to use them. And so it's a real rigorous training program, and the kids go through all sorts of interpersonal things, and it's just really fun kind of story with a little bit of emotional impact, a little bit of soap opera stuff, but big robot action as well. This art style is very, is sort of a Japanese manga style, but it's in color, and the coloring is, you know, your typical modern-day coloring with a lot of, you know, digital look to it. And so the coloring really brings out the manga art, in my opinion. Manga art's okay, but when it's colored like this, I think it takes it kind of to the next level. So you might check it out. Pretty cool. Gear School, Volume 2.
I picked up the first volume of this, but I actually haven't gotten around to reading it yet. Graphic novels and trade paperbacks have a really bad habit of sitting unread on my stacks of things to read for an extended period of time.
I have the same tendency, but you know what really tends to get me to look at those things is when the second volume gets solicited, because then I have to go and look at it and say, oh, was the first one good? Should I order the second one?
It usually gets me to read the first volume, and it's probably what's going to happen here.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying.
But I've had other times where I like that first volume, so I'll order the second, but by the time the third gets around, since I know I like the first, there's not the incentive to read the second to determine if I need to order the third, so it only works for the first volume, for me. Okay, next up we've got another pick from Damien. Let's listen to that.
Hey guys, it's Damien back again with my next pick for the month, still in Dark Horse, which they've actually got as their gem of the month, which is on page 52, and it is Star Wars The Force Unleashed 2. Now, as if you remember, actually, when the first one came out, I actually recorded about that one too. I just realized that. But this is actually based on the video game, which is coming out. It's, as it says, it's the sequel to The Force Unleashed, which came out last year. And it was a really good game. The book was actually quite good as well. You know, so I'm interested in seeing how this is actually going. It's written by Hayden Blackman, and the artist is Omar Francia. Hopefully I did that correctly. Now, this is actually the author from the original game as well, who's actually doing the story for it too. So it's going to be interesting how they go about this, since actually in the original game, the main character doesn't survive the end, no matter which ending you go to. There's actually two endings for it, so it's actually going to be interesting and see where it comes from, or what they do for it, or how they retcon it. Hey, you got to do something like that with a comic, don't you? Okay, so this is going to be interesting. I love the book. I love the actual game. I will be getting this one, and I reckon you all should pick something like it up, since really there's going to be not much Star Wars coming out, since they've got rid of Legacy as well last month. Okay, then I'll let you go back to the guys.
I think Dark Horse is going to be spinning up some new Star Wars titles, so we may have a mini-series or two between, but I do think we're going to get some more to replace both Legacy, which finished, and Knights of the Old Republic. Now, with this one, I picked up the first Force Unleashed, and I liked it. I'm debating if I want to get this one, but, you know, if the lead character from the first died, they could always bring him back as kind of an Obi-Wan kind of advisor for a new character this time around if they wanted to. The art, though, from what I recall, was really nicely done. I don't know if that's the same artist the same artist did the original graphic novel for this, too. All right, that finishes the picks for Dark Horse. Taking us over into DC is Joe. Let's listen to his pick.
Hey, all. It's Joe from TaxAdviceGuys.com with my only pick this month. Out of the DC section of the catalog, page 68, Superman Earth 1 hardcover. This is basically DC's attempt at the Ultimate Universe, written by Joe Straczynski, art and cover by Shane Davis and Sandra Hope. It's retelling Superman's origin through a more modern take. Straczynski's been a huge Superman fan his entire life. He's made no secret at all about how big of a Superman fan he is. So I'm personally very excited to see what a incredible writer with an extremely talented artist is going to do on a character that he truly loves. Again, it's a hardcover, 136 pages. On DCBService.com, we've got it half off for $9.99. With that, I hand it back over to the guys.
I'm really curious about this. I don't know about you, Bob, but for me, Straczynski's comic writing, I've been kind of hot and cold on. Some I've liked, some it's like, why did he do that?
Well, I agree, but usually where Straczynski falls down for me is in the marathon.
Yeah.
You know, it's like he usually can do really good ideas and, you know, set up and, you know, it's like when you get far into, you know, Rising Stars or Midnight Nation or, you know, whatever series that he's doing, even Spider-Man, after he'd been doing it a while, it just started going off the rails for me. But at first, when he's doing something, it's usually really good, at least for me. So this one, it's the first story. It'll probably, you know, I'll probably like it. The only part that had me on the fence about this one was the fact that it's, you know, it's kind of like, it's not really an Elseworlds, because I guess they're saying this is going to be the Earth One, you know, from the new set of multiple Earths that they have. So, you know, in that respect, it'll be sort of a continuity-ish issue, but it's just like, how many times do I need to see an alternate take on a Superman origin? That's the part that kind of had me on the fence on this one, even though it's by Straczynski. But what really tipped me over on this one was the discount on it for, you know, a 136-page hardcover story for only $10. So like, ah, what the hell? It's, you know, not any more expensive really than buying, you know, comic issues. So I'm going to give it a try.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's usually the marathon where Straczynski kind of, you know, trips up. That having been said, there were a couple of things he did on Fantastic Four and Spider-Man in particular that have me a little leery on this compared to, say, if it was by Geoff Johns doing a retelling of Superman's origin. Because I agree with you. How many more origins do we need for a new Superman or a new variant take on him or whatever? But Straczynski has a bad habit, I think, or at least for me, of really clarifying the origin. You know, the whole animal totem thing he did with Spider-Man, the whole twist he tried to do on the cosmic rays, and kind of, I don't want to say here's what you're too stupid to figure out kind of a vibe when he retells the origins, but he always tries to put a little twist on it or something to show how clever he is. And he is clever, don't get me wrong. But, I mean, I don't know that we need that necessarily with a Superman story. I'm not going to say we're going to get that with this Superman story.
I'm almost a little better with it that it's off on another world and it's not, you know, polluting the main continuity.
That's true.
It's kind of like, boy, I wish those Spider-Man animal totems were off on Earth Straczynski over, you know, Marvel instead of in the mainline Marvel universe.
Yeah,
and you can kind of take them or leave them.
It does give him a bit more wiggle room. And again, he can be a brilliant writer. I loved his stuff on Babylon 5. He's done some comic work I really enjoyed. I don't know. I'm really curious about this. We may end up discussing this, even though it's longer than what we usually talk about, either on a weekly comic spotlight or some other episode, just to kind of see what we think of their launching of this new kind of Earth One. One of the things I think that's going to differentiate the Earth One from, say, the Ultimate line over at Marvel is I think they're going to try to keep each installment as a standalone thing. Yeah, I expect a Volume 2 of this to build on what happens with this, but I don't think we're going to necessarily have to have had read this Superman Earth 1 to understand what happens in the next Superman Earth 1 story.
Right, and I'll also be curious on how quickly they roll this out, because this is only the beginning. You know, then they're going to be doing Batman, I'm sure, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, Flash, etc. They're going to be doing Earth 1 stories on a lot of characters. And, you know, are they going to be putting one of those out a month? Are they going to be doing one every other month? How long until they flip over and do the soft cover versions of them?
Yeah.
You know, how much are they going to charge for the soft cover if the hard cover is $20? You know, if they make the soft cover, you know, $12.99 or something.
I'm also curious who's editing the Earth One series. And the reason I say that is, I mean, I could see them going down kind of what, I guess, what Pocket Books has done with the Star Trek novels, where they've got different kind of generations going at once, different areas of the franchise. But for a while, there was a new Star Trek book a week, it seemed like. They've kind of scaled back as the popularity died down. But I could easily see them going with that kind of an approach of, let's start it up a little slow, let's establish the Superman 1, then the Batman, or whatever order they're going to do, and then maybe get things rolling a little bit faster to where people at bookstores are kind of getting sucked into the comic book, you know, habit and stuff. And that could be very good. So I'm real curious about this. I hope it, you know, clicks with the audience. I hope it's a good story. Certainly it's a great recommendation. So thanks for sending that in, Joe. Okay, our next pick is on page 88. It's got a 50% discount through DCBS, and it is Supergirl 55. Written by Sterling Gates, art by Jamal Igel and John Sibal. Hopefully I got that last name right. And we've got a new cover artist, Amy Reeder, who had been doing stuff over on Madame Xanadu. Good artist there. Certainly Jamal Igel, great artist, and Sterling Gates has just done some wonderful stuff with this title. This is one that, you know, the twist here is they're introducing a Bizarro Supergirl, and I don't know that we really ever have seen a Bizarro Supergirl since really Crisis. I think pre-Crisis there was a Bizarro just about everybody, but you know, it'll be interesting to see where this character came from, how it impacts Supergirl. But Sterling Gates and Jamal Igel have completely turned this title around. It is consistently a good, strong, you know, read, a good, strong character, and a great all-ages book, and one that I consistently enjoy. So definitely something to check out.
No, I agree. I talked to both Sterling and Jamal at the Phoenix Comic Con. They're both great guys, and I love what they're doing with the Supergirl title. So I am really looking forward to what we get with the Bizarros brought into the Supergirl title. So next up on the same page, we've got the anniversary issue of Superman Batman, number 75. I had kind of fallen off this title for a while, but it seems to be going back on the – it's back on my pull list and back on the rails. And this particular issue is an extra-sized one. It's a 56-page issue, which probably means something like 40 pages of story. 40, maybe 42, 44. It's $4.99. And by the way, just as an editorial comment, I wish they would really just put in the solicits how many story pages, not how many total pieces of paper are between the covers.
I'd kind of like both.
Yeah, but anyway, it's by Paul Levitz and various other writers, but Paul Levitz, Joe Kelly, David Finch, J.T. Krull, and Steven Siegel, with art by Jerry Ordway, David Finch, Adam Hughes, Francis Manapul, Duncan Rouleau, and it's just lots of writers, lots of artists, but Paul Levitz is going to be uniting Superman and Batman with the Legion, and Luthor is doing something in the past to affect the Legion, and they have to try to stop whatever he's doing from affecting the existence of the Legion in the far future. So that sounds like a cool story idea, plus it's an anniversary issue. If you haven't been trying out this title, might be a good issue to just give a read and see how it's coming along. You know, a couple of iconic characters. It's essentially like the old world's finest title. So 50% off from DCBS on this one. It'll set you back $2.49.
Cool. And speaking of Legion of Superheroes, we've got a clip from Randy Dixon. Let's listen to that.
My first selection of the month comes from the DC section, page 100. Showcase presents the Legion of Superheroes, Volume 4. DC Comics just recently restarted the Legion of Superheroes comic book again in the first issue. In my opinion, it's one of the best things that's been done in a long time. The Legion has a long, long history in comic books, and this volume offers new readers a chance to go back and catch up on what made the Legion great. This specific volume is where Dave Cockrum comes in as artist on the Legion, and he defined what would be the new look for the Legion, getting them out of the Silver Age. A lot of these stories are still very Silver Age rich, i.e. not necessarily great, but they do introduce a lot of the major characters and villains that are within the Legion. So if you'd like to get into the Legion, this is a great place to start at a very low price point. Now back to the guys.
Yeah, and this showcase also includes the Tornado Twins, which were the parents of Excess and Impulse, who's now, I guess, Kid Flash over the Titans and stuff. So I have not read that story. I'm curious about that one. Of course, I'll probably, I prefer the stuff in color, particularly for the superhero stuff, so I don't know if I'll get this Essential, or I mean this Showcase, or, they've got all this in DC, I keep getting them.
Yeah, I have it.
DC Archives.
Oh, there are, looking at my shelf over there.
Of course you have them.
Yeah, it's, they have at least 10 or 11 archive volumes of Legion of Superheroes. They have a lot of Legion of Superheroes in archives.
I've read a lot of the really early Legion stuff when they were reprinting it in Adventure Comics when it went to the Digest format. And I might have some of those archives. I need to go check because, you know, San Diego's coming up. I may do a little shopping there. Okay, our next pick is on page 103. It's got a 50% discount. And this is one of those things where I'm thinking about double dipping, and I usually don't. It's a trade paperback of the world's greatest superheroes. This is the Paul Dini, Alex Ross stuff that they did between 1998 and 2003, including Superman, Peace on Earth, Batman, War on Crime, Shazam, Power of Hope, Wonder Woman, Spirit of Truth, JLA, Secret Origins, and JLA, Liberty and Justice. Really good stories, incredible artwork by Alex Ross. This is going to put it to a roughly 8-inch by 11-inch form factor, so not quite the tabloid size we had before, but still I think bigger than a regular comic book. And these things, when they came out in that tabloid size, I think they were like almost $10 a piece or whatever, but because of that and the page count, they were showing up on the trade list and doing 30,000-40,000 or whatever. I mean, these things just did very well, and they're, again, great stuff. I've got all the originals somewhere because of the odd size. I'm not quite sure where at the moment, but it's one I'm definitely thinking about double dipping on, and for me that's not something I do often. It's 400 pages. It's $29.99, again 50% discount through DCBS. If you have not read these things and you like Alex Ross art, definitely something you should check out.
Yeah, that I guess that like Alex Ross art is it's funny because on the preview call, I forget, was it Randy Z?
Yeah.
Who was saying he didn't really like Alex Ross art. It was just too, you know.
Too realistic. He didn't like the folds and the cloth and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I get that.
Yeah.
So he also, I think, thought Superman was a little off model or something like that.
And Ross tends to draw him looking like some dude he knows that he uses for photo reference. So, you know, I can see that, you know, again, if you don't like that. But I really like Alex Ross's art, so this is absolutely great. And I have, they did a hardcover of this, slipcased hardcover. It's like an absolute, but I don't think at that point they were calling it an absolute. So it is kicking around out there and probably out of print hardcover edition also.
But if it's a slipcased hardcover, I should check to see if I have that then. Because, again, this is the sort of thing I would double dip on, and that would have been a big size thing, right?
Yeah,
interesting. Okay.
Okay, and next up, we're going to pop over into Wildstorm. And in Wildstorm, they have a new series starting up. It's a 6-issue series, and it's called Ides of Blood, number one, written by Stuart Paul, with art by Christian Deuce. And this is 44 BC, and Julius Caesar has conquered Transylvania. And
bad choice.
Well, it's just they took the vampires from Transylvania and they made them Rome's new slave class. And when rich Romans start turning up with fang marks on their neck, a vampire slave turns Roman soldier is trying to capture that killer, and it's just kind of like, you know, ancient Rome with vampires. Sounds cool to me. I like these kind of stories, so I'm going to give it a try. I'm going to get this first issue at a minimum and see how I like the story. We've got it here on page 113 of the previous catalog with a 50% discount. It's a $3.99 book, so you can get it for $1.99.
Okay, next up we've got a clip from Drew. Let's listen to that.
Hello, this is Drew Woodworth from the Killer Comics Podcast again, with my second pick of the month. It's from DC Comics, Vertigo, It is called The Green Woman. It's a hardcover. It's written by Peter Straub and Michael Easton. The art and cover is by John Bolton. I've read a little bit of Peter Straub. I read The Ghost Story, and I read Talisman, which was written by him and Stephen King. He's a pretty good writer. I guess this graphic novel is actually sort of a continuation of the story of one of his bestsellers called The Throat. I have not read that. So the main reason why I'm picking this up is because the art is by John Bolton. John Bolton, I first remember seeing his art back in the 80s. He did a lot of work for Marvel's Epic Line. Did a series called The Black Dragon. He did a graphic novel called Someplace Strange. And he's got a painted style. I think he was one of the first artists to really do a fully painted interior art on comic books. And I don't know where he's been lately. I think he's done some covers, but he hasn't done a full book for a while. So I'm pretty much picking this up mostly for his art. So if you like painted style, or if you're familiar with John Bolton, you might check this out. It looks pretty cool.
I'm in the same boat. I'm picking this up on the strength of John Bolton's artwork. And John Bolton, if you are into him, he's done a lot of stuff for other publishers too. You can go on to Comic Book DB. I've got to comicbookdb.com, search on the creator John Bolton, and you know, get a chronological listing of all the stuff he's done. But he's done a lot of work. He's done illustrations for role-playing games, collectible card games. He's done comics work. You know, many people probably best know him for his Marvel comic stuff, but he's done stuff for lots of smaller indie publishers as well. But I really like his painted style. So again, I'm in the same boat here, picking this series up because of the John Bolton art.
And of course, we're in Vertigo, so we're going to have a pick from Damien. Let's see what he's got to say this time around.
Hey all, it's Damien from LordShaper.com, back again with my third pick for the month, which you can find on page 129 from Vertigo. It is, of course, going to be Hellblazer, and this issue is number 270. Now, you know that I love Hellblazer, that I'm, you know, actually trying to get every appearance of him now. I've got all the issues of the actual series, but I'm trying to get further than that now. Now, the main reason I want to put this out is, since there's actually been the announcement sort of thing that we're going to have Swamp Thing coming back into the DC universe, which also brings other characters that are allowed to come back in, this one's actually got one of those other characters in it. It's actually going to have Shade in it as well. So we've got Peter Milligan writing again, we've got Giuseppe Camaluni, I hope that's correct, and Stefano Landini doing the art on it, and the covers, of course, by Simon Bisley, who's been doing quite a good work on the covers of late. But we get to have John Constantine and Shade the Changing Man actually going around here. So this is going to be an interesting issue. If you love that actual series from back in the 90s, I don't really think Shade's been seen that much since, so this might be one of his first appearances since that series finished. So I'll check that out if I was you. It's still only $2.99 and on page 129, so go ahead and pick it up. Okay then, let's go back to Bob and John.
So have they announced that characters like Swamp Thing are going back into the DC Universe maybe? I mean, that's what he said. I hadn't heard that.
I had not heard that either, but I will believe that he saw that on some news site.
I totally trust him on that. Interesting decision. I think it's potentially a good one, because really the only character that the DC Universe has ever gotten back after being Vertigoized was Animal Man.
Yeah, you know, and I think some of them that just have never, well, I won't say never, but I mean that have not recently taken off in the Vertigo universe, it might make sense to try to make use of them, especially because Swamp Thing, you know, had a very successful run integrated in with DC type of characters before he got pulled to Vertigo.
Well, before that title kind of established Vertigo.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it would be interesting to see, and Hellblazer too. I mean, those are the two that kind of make sense to dive back into the DC universe and stuff. It'll be interesting to see how they approach that and handle that. That's kind of cool.
Okay, so we are now up to the IDW section of the catalog. It still kind of freaks me out when I don't see Image come right after DC. But we now have IDW. They snuck in there because the magic of the alphabet. And on page 144, 145, we've got a new Dungeons & Dragons series. coming out from IDW. Now, this is certainly a niche title. I mean, it's people who have at some time or, you know, probably have at some time or are currently playing Dungeons & Dragons. They're going to be interested in a Dungeons & Dragons comic book. I think you might get some people who are just into kind of sword and sorcery in general, but I would suspect that the major interest of this are people who've actually played D&D. And I'm also thinking that this might sell pretty decently in game shops in addition to comic shops. So be curious if IDW is pursuing channels other than Diamond to get this directly into gaming shops. Because I think, you know, things like Knights of the Dinner Table, which we have both read, and, you know, it's one of my favorite books. That's something that has a very strong following in gaming shops and I think gets there, you know, and those numbers are not even counted by Diamond because they're getting in there through game distributors.
Well, this is the kind of thing that they ought to have through Alliance and stuff like that, which is Diamond's game distributor, among other game distributors, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I just mean that it's something that's not going to ever show up in your numbers.
Right,
you know, that you,
right. Because I'm looking strictly at what's going through Diamond, through the comic channel and stuff. And
right.
Yeah, this is one that would skew well outside of that. And, frankly, when this gets collected into a trade, which it will down the line, could do well in bookstores.
Right. So I played Dungeons & Dragons in high school, starting in probably 1977. So very early, before they were even in hardcover. And had a break for a while after college, and then I picked it up and played again when my kids were little. And I've been playing again for the last couple of years, and I've been playing in a game with my kids. In fact, I'm going, after we record this podcast, for a D&D session with the boys. So this is right up my alley. I'm going to be buying... this is a dollar. It's only 50 cents after the discount. I'm going to be buying a pile of these and handing them out to my whole D&D group. So this is you know, just something that I'm really interested in. They're going to be leading. This is a zero issue, so they're going to lead into Dungeons & Dragons number one in November. So, you know, if you're a D&D guy, don't pass this one up. Really cheap jumping on point.
And while that may seem like a big gap between the zero issue and the first issue, if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense because it'll have time for this issue to come out, people to read it and decide if they like it or not before they have to place orders for that first issue that comes out in November. So this is kind of a priming of the pump move by IDW and probably a very smart move to do.
Right. So next up, that I wanted to talk about, we're going to jump a few more pages in previews up to page 154. And we have Harlan Ellison's Phoenix Without the Ashes. And this is a Harlan Ellison story. And I'm not really sure because they're not saying it seems like I've heard this title before. I mean, I'm a fan of Harlan Ellison's comic work. I have pretty much all of the comic stuff he's done. He's done things in Epic Illustrated. He had a series called Dream Corridor that he's had come out. He's done various, you know, Vic and Blood. He's done some, you know, classic issues of the Avengers. He did, I think, you know, back in the, I'm trying to think of what years, in the early 70s, and he did like a really classic issue on the Hulk, the Incredible Hulk that I still remember, called The Brute That Shouted Love at the Heart of the Atom. I think that introduced Jor-El. And, you know, he's done classic issue episodes of Star Trek. He wrote City on the Edge of Forever is one of them, one of my favorite all-time Star Trek episodes, the original series. So I'm a big fan of Harlan. So seeing him do a comic book here, and he's also, you know, he's won Hugo and Nebula and Edgar Awards multiple times. So I don't think there's any arguing that he is a master storyteller. So seeing a series coming out from him, that's just something I have to get on. So if you've never tried out Harlan, this might be a good chance to do so. But you can go out here to page 154, take a look, see if it sounds interesting to you. This particular series, we got the year 2785. Devin, a farmer banished for challenging his community's elders, discovers a secret that changes everything he knew about the world, leading him on an adventure beyond his understanding and a quest to solve a mystery beyond his understanding before his entire world is destroyed in a cataclysm. So it's just a, you know, standard, I won't say standard, Ellison writing is going to be anything but standard, but it's a, you know, it's a sci-fi story. It's one of these classic formula sci-fi stories, which I love. So I'm definitely going to be checking this one out. It's a $3.99 book, as are most books from IDW. This particular one, we've got a 50% discount going on, so you can try it out for $1.99 if you're a DCBS customer.
And it's going to be a true sci-fi story, not a story with sci-fi trappings. I mean, that's the advantage right. of getting a writer like Ellison.
Absolutely.
Okay, moving up to page 164, we've got Phantom Jack, The Nowhere Man Agenda. This is by Michael Sangiacomo, who we talked to a couple of months back.
Yes, we did. It was about
Starlight Theater or Starlight Drive-In.
And we also talked about his Phantom Jack stuff.
The original Phantom Jack stuff. So it's some good stuff. Phantom Jack has the power of invisibility. It's in a fairly realistic world. The twist here is Jack is a reporter and isn't going out and fighting crime or whatever. He's using it to, you know, forward his not his career, but whatever. I mean, using it in that respect. And in this one, he encounters the Nowhere Man, who's got invisibility powers, but apparently has a lot better control over them and a lot more power with them. So it'll be very interesting to kind of see how that plays out. I enjoyed the earlier Phantom Jack stuff. We've got a 50% discount through DCBS on this, so it takes that $19.99 price down to just under $10. So definitely worth checking out. Now, a few pages later, it takes us out of IDW and into Image. We've got Guardians of the Globe. It's the first issue of a six-issue miniseries. It's Kirkman's team title. It's got everybody from Invincible, Brit, on up and down, some of the other members of the Guardians of the Globe that we've seen in the pages of Invincible, and for that matter over in Astonishing Wolfman too. You know, we got Shapeshifter, a few others. Basically, it's going to be interesting to see how he does on a team book. I mean, he's done very well with the ensemble cast over on Walking Dead. He's done great superhero stuff over on Invincible. So this should be a good kind of blending of the two. They've got three, you know, full-size pages of art on pages 169, 170, and 171 in previews, and it looks pretty good. They're unlettered, so we don't have the dialogue and stuff, but definitely looks like Britt's going to be featured quite a bit in this, which is cool. I love that character. We've got, like I said, a 50% discount through DCBS. That takes the $3.50 price down to $1.75. If you're liking what Kirkman's doing over on Invincible, this kind of looks like it's spinning right out of that and, you know, definitely worth checking out. Next up, we've got a clip from Randy. Let's listen to that.
My second pick of the month comes from the Image Comics section, page 172, Morning Glories number 1. This is the start of a brand new series, and you get 44 full pages of story in this beginning issue for just $3.99. Tagline on this is, it's Runaways meets Lost. I've never seen Lost, but I do know I enjoy Runaways. I'm really enjoying what Image Comics is doing by integrating some of their heroes and within their own little universe, making it akin to Marvel's and DC's, where you've got multiple heroes living in this world you can become familiar with. This story is by Nick Spencer, who also did Existence 2.0, Forgetless, and Shuttertown, with art by Joe Esma. Hopefully I got that name right. It's 44 pages of story. You can't go wrong here. It's a new series. You got sample art and previews. It looks really good. This is a great place to jump onto a new Image book. Now back to the guys.
This was one of those where the cover and solicitation had me intrigued but didn't have me sold. And it wasn't until I saw the four pages of art they've got on 173 that I'm thinking, okay, I think I'm going to pick this up.
I'll try it out, too.
I mean, the tagline of Runaways meets Lost, interesting, but nebulous. Okay, Lost, so there's going to be some kind of a mystery. Are they going to be set on an island? Runaways, we've got young teens. I could see that from the cover, you know. So I'm curious where they're going to go with this. The couple of pages look cool.
Looks like we definitely one that we can pick and talk about on Weekly Comic Spotlight when it does come out.
Yeah.
Since we're both getting it. So one that we're not both getting is my next pick. Page 176, we've got Nancy in Hell. Good girls go to heaven, but there's not that many good girls left. So after her death, Nancy awakens in hell in a creepy landscape of decomposing lost souls, demons in the shadows, outcasts, chainsaws, booze, and doom. Can Nancy escape from hell? And it's kind of like bad girl art, demons, all this kind of stuff. But it's, you know, really Juan Jose Rip. I love his really detailed art style. He's done a lot of stuff previously for Avatar. He's done Black Summer and No Hero. Lots of things like that, and they have four quarter page size preview art pages on page 177. They've also got the cover image on page 176. This is the sort of thing where it's like, if you like this kind of thing, you'll probably like this one. And it's like, I certainly like this sort of thing. This is the kind of story that's probably I'm pretty sure is up Damien's alley, for instance.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of things. This is one that you definitely don't want to get, but you know, it's something that I'm really going to be getting and I'll have a good time with.
Oh, totally, totally. And I can see that. And the irony here is what's turning me off is the quality of the art. It's really good stuff, but for something like this, I don't really want that kind of a detail. You know, this is the sort of thing, if this guy was doing some other book, I'd probably check. If it was Nancy in Heaven, I would be checking this
there
out.
There you go. Well, that's like also when you get like kind of a Josh Blaylock kind of style of art, it's a little easier to take this subject matter for you, I think.
Yeah, and that's just me and my squeamishness. I totally get that. But does look interesting. Okay, next up we've got a clip from Drew. Let's listen to that.
Hello, this is Drew Woodworth from the Killer Comics Podcast with my third pick of the month. It's from Image Comics. It's called Sullivan's Sluggers. It's written by Mark Andrew Smith, and the art and cover is by James Stokoe. James Stokoe has been drawing that book Orcstain, which you may or may not be familiar with. I have not been picking that up, but when I saw the cover to this is actually an OGN. It's 176 pages, it's $16.99 full color. The cover art just looks awesome. It's basically the story is there's this team of, I think they're like a minor league baseball team, and they travel to this town. And when the sun goes down after the seventh inning stretch, basically the town comes alive with like monsters. And so this baseball team has to fight their way through all these monsters. That's the basic gist of it. But the cover art just looks really awesome. Basically, it's just this guy standing there with, you can see his back, and he's got a baseball bat slung over his shoulder, and there's this huge tower of like monsters just coming straight at him. So, and if you're familiar with James Stokoe's style, it's just really, really great illustration. And so, just looks really good. Looks like a really fun, kind of wild, kind of comic. You know, and it's OGN, so you don't have to wait for each issue. You know, it's a cool, full, complete story. And just check it out.
And I am a big fan of Orcstain, at least the two issues that have come out. And seeing that he's done a 176-page OGN here, goes a long way towards explaining why we haven't seen issue number 3 of Orcstain come out. So I'm glad that this one got pointed out, because I had totally missed the fact that James Stokoe was doing this, and I'm a fan of his work.
Okay, next up, moving into the Top Cow section of the Image solicitations. Again, we, you know, a few months ago, we're getting, I don't think, much of anything from back here other than the occasional, you know, Madame Mirage or whatever. But then I dipped my toes in with Broken Trinity, and really I've been completely sucked into this universe, as have you. Overall, they're doing some great stuff across the board. I think both of us are getting every new comic they're putting out this month, right?
Yes.
Take that for what it is, in terms of us, you know, going from 0 to 100% in very short order. But the item that we're talking about in particular this month is on page 203. It is Darkness the Four Horsemen. It's the first of a four-issue miniseries. It's written by David Hine. And basically, it takes... It's a dark tale of the darkness. Gee, go figure. But the darkness, you know, since he's gotten his power back on his 21st birthday, really hasn't known fear. I mean, you get all this power and can pretty much take on anyone who comes. You kind of get a little complacent. Or at least you could. So in this case, they're basically going to shake him out of that complacency by, you know, having him have to hunt down four bikers in the California desert and realize that this may be a little more than he can take on. Based on the title of The Four Horsemen, I'm assuming we're going to get, you know, war, pestilence, famine, and death out of these four guys, but that's
just a
guess.
You would be correct.
So, looks like
we've got it.
Or go ahead.
We've got an interview with David Hine and Jeff Wamester that'll be coming out on the Friday episode, and they'll talk more about this book. And you are correct, John. Those four bikers are, in fact, the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
Well, and that's just a cool modern take on it. I think that's a great idea. So, you know, obviously I haven't listened to the interview yet. I haven't had time to edit that. I'll be doing that this afternoon. But I'm looking forward to listening to the interview myself and to this kind of a story on the darkness. I think it's a smart move in this case to pull this out to a separate series so we can be getting the regular darkness stuff, you know, ongoing as well. And basically everything I've been reading lately from Top Cow I've been very happy with. And we've got a 75% discount on this first issue, so that $3.99 cover price goes down to about $1. So kind of hard to pass that up.
Okay, and then our next pick, also from Top Cow, we're going to pop a couple of extra pages down the line there to page 206, and we've got the Witchblade Due Process one-shot. This one's got a 50% discount. I've talked to Phil Smith. This is also in the Friday interview episode. Phil is the writer of this. Phil's an editor at Top Cow, and he jumped in with the writing chores on this one. Also, and the art on this is by Alina Urasov, who you might know best from a lot of the covers that she's done over at Marvel. She's done covers on X-23 series, on some of on the NYX books, Young Avengers. She did a couple of full issues, but she hasn't done that much full issue art. She's done a lot of cover art, and I'm going to be really curious to see her doing the panel-to-panel continuity in a whole issue here. But this one shot takes a look at a story of Sarah, where before she had the Witchblade, she was a cop, and at one point some bad cops, and she was in on the bus, not in a bad way, but she was just along on the bus, but they were pinning a crime on an innocent guy to kind of cover up some of their dirty dealings. So they ended up arresting this guy, sending him to jail. While he was in jail, in order to survive, he kind of made a deal with dark forces. And now he's out of jail, but he's in trouble because he's got these, you know, demonic ties. There's a lot better description on the interview episode, but she kind of feels partially responsible for this. So she gets involved in trying to help with this. So it's kind of a cool take. You have like the past, you got the current, you know, her struggle with her conscience on that over something that she did, but it wasn't really something that she was driving, but she participated in. And it's a side story. It's a story that takes place in the Witchblade world, but it's not a direct tie-in to the exact current continuity, so it can be read on its own also. But I'm very interested in how this one will play out, so I'm going to be picking this one up. Sounds like a cool take.
Definitely. Now, before we jump over into the Marvel previews, there's one thing I want to mention real quick that we didn't have on our list here, Bob. It's on page 208. It's the Witchblade Redemption Volume 1 trade paperback. It is 176 pages. It covers issues 131 through 135 of Witchblade, which is done by Ron Mars and Stepan Sedgwick. Brilliant artist, great writer too. But it's $4.99 cover price in comic book shops. Through DCBS, you can get it for was it, 249?
Yeah, 249.
So, I mean, it's hard to go wrong with that kind of a price. And again, brilliant move by Top Cow, introductory pricing, get people in the door. And, you know, I think once they do, that people are going to like what they see.
And so, this is a good jumping on point. When I talked to Ron Mars last month about the artifacts, going back to about issue 131 of Witchblade, right here, what's collected in this book is one of the more recent jumping on points to get people back on board with this stuff. And if you're interested in following the artifact stuff that's going on right now that Ron Mars is kind of weaving through the Top Cow universe, this would be a good and a very good entry point price-wise, too, to be getting back into Witchblade. And I really like Stepan Sayek's art, so this is definitely something I'm going to get. And I missed this at first when I saw it. I was like, wow, you know, $4.99, even at the regular retail price, we're talking a buck an issue. And even with a buck an issue, those five issues make, you know, maybe about 100, 110 pages. This is 176 pages, so there's a lot of additional material, sketches and background material and other kinds of stuff that Top Cow generally puts into their trades. So this looks like it's a superb value for your dollar, for your comics dollar. So if you've been interested at all in any of the Top Cow stuff, this particular book is really something to go and look for in particular.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And again, for that price point, geez. Okay, we're now going to hop over into the Marvel previews for a little bit. Our first pick there is on page 6. It is Spitfire number 1. It's a $3.99 comic. We've got a 50% discount through DCBS, taking it to just below $2. And this is written by Paul Cornell, who's just been doing some great stuff with MI 13, Captain Britain. He did, I think, the Wisdom series. He's just been doing a string of really cool things. And again, he's continuing that with Spitfire, who's coming over to New York, and she's currently, you know, more or less dating Blade, which is kind of interesting because I'm pretty sure she is a vampire. And they're going to deal with repercussions from her past and stuff like that in this one shot. This is part of the Women of Marvel thing, but kind of regardless of that, as a standalone story, I'm expecting this to be pretty good because Paul Cornell has just delivered on a regular basis some really good quality stuff.
And could be some of the last Paul Cornell stuff we see from Marvel, because I believe he's just signed an exclusive with DC.
That's what I was hearing. Do we know what he's going to be working on at DC?
I'm sure I could look it up, but I don't know off
curious.
The top of my head.
Because, again, he's a great writer. Sorry to see him go from Marvel, but happy to see him head over to DC and looking forward to what he does there.
I think he was a prime candidate when they canceled Captain Britain and MI-13. I think he felt a little shafted, so, you know, he'll go over and he'll do some good stuff. He's done some very good stories, so. Next up, and this is, you know, what else is interesting here, John, is this is the first month since we've been doing previews, Spotlight, that I think we haven't gotten a single contribution from a listener or other podcaster for a Marvel book. So the only Marvel books we're talking about this month are the ones you and I are talking about.
We might have had that once before, but you're right. It doesn't happen often. We've had times where we're real heavy on Marvel clips.
Yeah, where it's almost everything is Marvel comics. But the next one up is Avengers in the Infinity Gauntlet. Caught my eye on page 34 here, primarily because it's written by Brian Clevenger and art by Brian Cirilla. And Brian Clevenger does Atomic Robo over at Red 5, which I love Atomic Robo.
Yeah.
So I'm really interested to see how he's going to play with some of the big, cool heroes from Marvel. And Brian Cirilla has done The Anchor most recently from Boom with Phil Hester, and also Rex Mundi, which has come out from both Image and Dark Horse. So, you know, this is Thanos has got the Infinity Gems. I believe that this is kind of a like that Secret Wars story that came out, where we're kind of going back and taking another look at a previous storyline.
Yeah, that's what I'm expecting too. I wish they do a little better job marking kind of what they're doing as that sort of all ages sort of a thing versus just kind of mixing it in with the rest.
Right. But, you know, this will be a neat take, and I like seeing those, especially, you know, again, having Brian on the writing on this is really what's selling it to me.
Yeah, I would like to see his take on some of these events, so it should be fun. Okay, next up on page 37 of the Marvel previews, we've got Captain America 609, written by Brubaker, art by Butch Geis, so great creative team there. We still have Bucky as Cap, probably will for a while, which is cool by me. And in this case, what's happening is Bucky has to go back to the place where he and Cap encountered that plane that, you know, Cap fell off of into the ice for a couple of decades, and Bucky lost his arm to, and, you know, started the events that became the Winter Soldier stuff for him. So it's the first time he's had to go back there. No doubt there will be, you know, emotional repercussions and whatnot. And they promise this is going to be the hardest hitting arc of Captain America ever by these two guys. And, you know, really, the whole volume, you know, we've been getting for the last 60, you know, issues or whatever of Cap have really all been about Bucky in various ways, shapes, and form. First as Winter Soldier, then as Cap and stuff. And now to get this kind of flashback to almost where it all began for that part should be a lot of fun. Definitely looking forward to this. We also get a backup feature of Nomad, Girl Without a World. They don't tell us anything about what's going to happen in that, but it's by McKeever, and he's doing a pretty good job with that character, so that should be good too.
Next up, we're going to pop out to page 68 and look at Thunderbolts number 147. Now, Jeff Parker, another writer who is on my list of I'll buy pretty much anything this writer puts his pen to, is Thunderbolts 147. The new take on the Thunderbolts is Luke Cage is coming over, and Luke is really shepherding a lot of these bad guy characters into kind of a reform. I haven't read any of the new stuff yet, but it seems to me like it's kind of like Suicide Squad in the Marvel Universe, maybe without the suicide missions. This particular issue guest stars the Avengers Academy, and the interesting part here is one of the prisoners that Cage is dealing with is the Purple Man. And the real interesting thing there, if you're familiar with the history of this, is Luke Cage is married to Jessica Jones, who was the character Diamond, I guess she was called, right? And she was also in the comic series Alias. And at one point, the Purple Man took control of her and basically had her as a slave for an extended period of time. So this is Luke's wife, the mother of his child, and he's dealing with this guy who really did bad things to her over an extended period of time. So I'm curious to see how this one's going to play out. So this meant if you have not been checking out Thunderbolts, but you're a fan of Luke and Jessica, this might be an issue to give a shot.
I've read the first issue of the Thunderbolts with Luke Cage and the, I guess it was Enter the Heroic Age, where they had kind of a short story leading up to it. And that short story really kind of set the scene really well, and the first issue really repositioned the Thunderbolts. And I think your take on kind of the Suicide Squad for the Marvel Universe is pretty accurate. They had a interesting end to that recent issue, and I'm curious where they're going to go with that. So definitely worth checking out. But man, with the Purple Man, I don't see how that can end anyway but a broken jaw for that guy. Should be good, though.
Yeah, if he's lucky, I guess. You know, he'll just get that broken jaw.
Yeah, that's the best case situation for the Purple Man, I guess. Yeah.
Next up, it's something that really wasn't even in the previews catalog or on the online solicit, but it showed up in the DCBS Excel spreadsheet, and I noticed it, and I was like, where did this come from? Because, again, it wasn't in any of the solicits, so it must have been something that just slipped through the cracks, but there is solicited an issue of Kick-Ass 2, Balls to the Wall, number one, so a new series of Kick-Ass. Since there's not a solicit, I'm not really sure if it's by Miller and John Romita Jr. I'm going to guess that it is because it's their creator-owned property. So
it seems unlikely they'd switch either the creator or the artist, but yeah.
Right. So I'm very curious here, and I really want to try this one out and see. So just a heads up for people that this is something that is coming if you are not a if you're not a DCBS customer, or if you even order off the website, because DCBS website is somewhat inscrutable at times on your ability to find various things. I like the concise nature of being able to see everything in the spreadsheet. So anyway, just really a heads up for people.
Yeah, and again, that's one of those kind of stealth solicitations. But it's funny because this is the kind of thing that, from a retailer perspective, you could do almost without looking at the solicitation itself, because you know who the creators are, you know what the material is, etc. But I had missed it when going through the DCBS spreadsheet myself, so if it hadn't been pointed out on the previews call, I'd have completely missed it too.
The kind of thing that people might want to mention to their local comic shop, hey, did you know that this book has been solicited, in case they missed it, you know, just so that they order copies and get them in their shop. You know, they can call up their Diamond rep and ask them, you know, what's the deal with this book.
Okay, that finishes our picks from the Marvel previews. So we're going to dive into the back half of previews. And on page 228 from Archaea Entertainment, we've got Lucid number 1. And this is being done in association with Zachary Quinto. And actor Michael Milligan, that actor from True Blood, Zach Quinto, of course, from both Heroes and Star Trek. And apparently they're dipping their toes into the comic stuff. Milligan, actually, or McMillan, I should say, the actor from True Blood, is the writer on this. And it's about, you know, forces trying to prevent mankind from reaching its true potential. And we've got an agent who's a combat mage, you know, trying to, you know, ensure America's freedom from the grip of evil and stuff. It seems like a almost a CIA meets sword and sorcery kind of a concept here, which has, I think, some cool aspects to it. It's a four-issue miniseries. It's 24 pages. I'm assuming that's both the page count physically and the number of story pages, give or take a page or so. But it looks very interesting. And again, with a couple actors behind it, this is the sort of thing that would not surprise me if later turned into a TV series or movie or something like that. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's cool when actors are kind of taking control of either their destiny or their own creativity and channeling that into the comics realm. I think that's just good for everybody. Because, I mean, let's think about it. Zach Quinto's the kind of guy who can get on the nightly talk shows and stuff, and if he's like, hey, I've got this comic book, half of America could say, oh, comics, they still exist. That's a good thing. So I'm looking forward to it. Should be fun.
And that's the real thing there, because an actor like that has, you know, if he gets on the Tonight Show or something, he is now speaking to 20 times the number of people that read comic books, you know. So if, like, 1 in 100 of those people, you know, just pick something up, it can have a huge effect on a book like this.
Yeah. Okay, next up, we got a clip from Damian. Let's listen to that.
Hey guys, Damian back once more for my next pick of the month, which is a full 100 pages from the last one on page 229, coming out from Archaea Entertainment. We have Titanium Rain Volume 2 hardcover. How much more can I say about this book? You know that I love this book. You know I've actually got a story in the first hardcover. I would still working on the story for the second hardcover, so it should be finished hopefully by the time you actually hear this. And yeah, this is actually a continuation of the great sci-fi drama by Kat and Josh. If you remember in one of the previous previews, interviews, episodes, the guys actually had Kat and Josh on there for a good substantial time talking about the book. The first book was sort of the setup of what was happening with the war going on between China and the rest of the world. You have the biotech sort of thing going through where you've got the pilots that couldn't make it as a normal pilot actually entering through Project Prometheus and getting, bio enhancements to sort of make up for the deficiencies they had. And this is where it all starts to happen. So this is going to be what would have been, if it was still coming out in issues, would have from 5 till 8, since it was going to be a 12-part series. This is the second book in it. There's going to be one more book after this, so it's the second part of the trilogy then. Again, it's going to be a hardcover there, so it's 196 pages and 1995. Full of extra features again, like they came in the back one there where we had the two stories, we had the promo pictures, you had the all sorts of stuff, all the tech stuff in the back there as well. So you can't go wrong with that. And the art is just fantastic. So you can always go check their website for that one. Okay, then I'll let you go back to the guys.
Yeah, we had Josh and Kat on for the first issue when this was going to be a comic series right before Archaea went and did some restructuring and kind of went silent for, 6 months or something?
Yeah, at least.
So we talked to him then. We got the first hardcover and stuff. Great stuff. Got the first issue, too. The art they're doing is just amazing. It's very cinematic in quality. Glad to see they're continuing it in the hardcover format. Would have, enjoyed it still as the comic and stuff, but at least they're still getting the material out.
Right. So, just for people to be aware, this is not something that's coming out in issues, so you want to read the rest of the story, pick up the hardcover. I don't know what the schedule would be like for soft cover versions of this. I don't recall seeing a soft cover solicit for the first volume yet.
No, neither do I. And there may not be plans to do a soft cover. I don't know. But don't go on the assumption that there are plans for that. If you want this, this is the original release of this material. Support it now. That way we're guaranteed to get that third volume of the hardcover, and then maybe down the line they may do soft covers. But if you're assuming, hey, I'll pick it up in a cheaper format later, that may not happen. So let's support these guys as best we can. Okay, we've got another clip from Damien. Let's listen to that.
Hey guys, it's Damien back once more with a pick from Avatar on page 239, which is Alan Moore's Neonomicon number 1. Now, if you remember a while ago, we actually had a Neonomicon, sort of like a one-shot. It was only cost about $1, if I remember correctly. So, and this is where Alan Moore's taking on his Cthulhu-type mythos. So, of course, I'm going to be interested in it. So, Alan Moore's doing the writing. You've got Jason Burrows doing the cover and the artwork, and it's going to be this is number 1 of 4, so it's $3.99, but you've got your choice of covers there. They've got the Book of the Dead incentive cover, you've got the wraparound, you've got the remarked edition, and the standard cover as well. This one I actually think I might try to chase down the incentive cover for, but I've always otherwise gone for the actual wraparounds for it. You seem to get more for your money with that. And a great big picture of Cthulhu on the front cover there underwater would be great in Ryolith. But, as I said, this is actually the follow-up to his series, The Courtyard. Now, I haven't read The Courtyard. I picked up the actual one-shot and really enjoyed it. And, so I will be picking this one up just because I like Alan Moore's stuff and I love Cthulhu's stuff. So I've read so much of it, and I'm sure Bob, I could talk into this one as well. It's about two FBI agents. It's sort of a modern-day thing rather than most of the Lovecraft side of things, where it was set, in his time period, which is back in the, 20s. In the 30s or 1920s and 1930s, got to remember what year we're in these days or what century we're in. But if you're interested in that sort of thing, you want to see Alan Moore writing horror type stuff, and he does write for Avatar, does a good job for it. So check it out on page 239, and I'm sure you won't be disappointed. Okay, here we go back to Bob and John.
Okay, and next we're going to pop forward into Boom Studios. I always feel compelled to say Boom instead of just Boom. But explosive quality of their product. What really caught my eye this month from Boom was a new title called Dracula, The Company of Monsters. And what really caught my eye there was Kurt Busiek is doing it. And he's co-writing it with Daryl Gregory. But, you know, I love Kurt Busiek. And here he's got Dracula Back from the Dead, starring in a new ongoing horror series. A powerful corporation acquires a valuable asset. They acquired Dracula. They think they own him. It's just, you know, having Dracula in the corporate world and how that's going to play out sounds like it's going to be an interesting take on things. The art is by Scott Godlewski, who has been doing the art on the Codebreakers series, which I have been enjoying quite a lot. And we've got some covers here by Ron Salas and Dan Brereton of Nocturnals fame. So I'm going to have to keep my eye out so I can try to remember to ask DCBS to ship me the Dan Brereton cover, because I love Dan Brereton's art. But Scott Godlewski is doing the insides, like his art style as well. Codebreakers trade paperbacks on that same page on 252, which so far has been a good story. I have not read the ending of that yet, but I've been enjoying that as that's been going along as well.
I've been enjoying that Cold Space series that's in the trade also right below Codebreakers 2. It's another one that Sam Jackson's behind, but again, get a talented, you know, creative individual like a good actor and stuff. This is a fun sci-fi thing. So Boom's just doing great stuff.
I actually skipped that series, and I won a copy of Cold Space number 1 at the trivia contest at the Phoenix Con, and read it and liked it a lot. So I've actually been hunting down the other issues of the actual Cold Space series as it comes out in issues.
Boom is one of those publishers that I don't think gets enough credit for all the good stuff it's doing these days, because it's got a very diverse lineup and is certainly one of the places in the back half of previews I think people should be spending their time looking through all the solicits. You're probably not going to like everything, but you're going to like something. So
right. I run hot and cold when I see an actor's name on something. So a lot of times it's not an auto sell. So I didn't have any expectation on Cold Space. And I was really pleasantly surprised with that number one issue. It was really good.
For me, it's certainly not an auto sell by any stretch, but it's one of those that, you know, they've got more lucrative places to be spending their time and their money. So when they're spending it on the comics, it's something I'll at least take notice. So that's one where it just, again, the lead character looks a lot like Sam Jackson, could easily turn into a movie. I'd be okay with that, you know. So it seems like an interesting way for them to create, you know, new vehicles for them to star in or just tell stories that they want to tell. Okay, next up, we're moving into Dynamite. We got a clip from Damien. Let's listen to that.
Hey, it's Damien back again with my second last pick for the month. Yes, I do have one more coming after this one. But this one is going to be on page 264. It's going to be The Last Phantom number 1 coming out from Dynamite Entertainment. It's multiple covers there. You got two covers by Alex Ross. Oh, actually, it's saying here it's got sneak peek covers by Alex Ross as well. So, and then you've got the Joe Prado and Fabian Naves. I hope that's right. I'm sure Bob will correct me on it. Covers as well. So there's quite a few different covers coming out for it. This is set down the track. So this is I grew up with the Phantom. We had the Phantom going through, you know, the normal comic strip, you know, through the, when I used to get the Sunday papers, you'd have the Phantom in there. When I was a kid, I used to rip out the comics from, take them from my dad, which he never liked, because he always wanted them. And then, you know, I was actually introduced to the Phantom actually through one of my primary school teachers, who was actually, she was a big collector and would go in and bring the comics into school for us, so we'd actually get to see them there. So I've had a fair bit of experience with them, and for the fact that my local comic shop I go to is called the Phantom Zone, and it's actually named after the Phantom, not after where you know, Zod was put in Superman 2. Well, I think it's just a play on both, but the colours are always going to be a purple and black, so that's the thing there. So I've had some experience with that. Actually, there's a guy in Sydney I met who's actually got a Phantom Museum here as well. So, but that's something totally else. This is what I want to talk about, is this comic. So it's actually a futuristic Phantom there. Alex Ross has actually redesigned the way the Phantom looks for it, which is really intriguing. It's sort of like, I don't know how to take this. There's not much on the story there, but I'm just wondering if it's going to be some sort of, you know, a post-apocalyptic and sort of thing. He's out in the jungle, he's wearing, you know, as much as what you can see on Tarzan, plus he's got the purplish, I don't know if it's paint or if it's blood or whatever it is that's dripped down him. So this is going to be interesting. I'm going to jump on board of this. It should be interesting. 32 pages and $3.99. It's written by, you know, Scott Beatty, and I really think that Dynamite should make a push to be up there with IDW up in the front section now. I think they've got the cred behind them now. They've been picking up all the a lot of things for now, which also has me wondering why other people bringing out Phantom comics if they've actually got the rights to them now. But that's something for another conversation. So, okay then, I'll let you all get going, and I'll be back with one more fairly soon.
The other publisher putting out Phantom stuff is Moonstone, and apparently somehow they both have the rights to it, which I don't think pleased Moonstone at all, because they've been doing Phantom for a bit.
I'm guessing that Phantom might have fallen into public domain or something. I mean, Dynamite does a lot of public domain-y kind of stuff, and Phantom's been around a long time. So
I don't think it's fallen into public domain, though, because they're licensing it from King Features, I believe.
Really? So I was curious how Moonstone and these guys are both doing it, but Dynamite will run right over. You know, they'll run right over Moonstone, though.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, they've got more visibility in the market. They do good stuff. But it comes down to how the contracts are written. That's how come, even though IDW has the Angel property, Angel's showing up over in the Buffy comic by Dark Horse. So it's just oddities of that. I agree with Damian that Dynamite ought to make a play for going in the front half. I think they'd do well there. They certainly have roughly the sales level they need and stuff like that. So, all right, we got another pick from Damian also in this area. Let's listen to that.
Hey guys, it's Damian back for the last time for this month, and we're turning all the way to page 304 from Oni Press, which is going to be Wasteland Hardcover, the Apocalypticon Edition, Volume 2. Now, it's $34.99, it's a hardcover, as name states, it's actually the second one, which I've got the first one sitting on the shelf. Now, I was originally getting Wasteland in trades just because I couldn't find the first couple of issues when I first found out about the book. So I think it was about 5 issues in. I just could not find back issues for it. So I started buying the trades. And from there, I found out about all the extra material that was actually put into the back of the books. You had extra stories, you had prose stories, and it was, and to be honest, it's the way that I think it should be done with comics. You put the extra stuff in the issues to get people to buy the issues rather than waiting off to a trade to actually put them in the trade. Now, this argument can go back and forwards, and I'm not going to get into it here because we're talking about a book that I'm trying to promote for you. But if you're like me and you couldn't find those original issues, so you started buying the trades, they brought out the Apocalyptic editions. Now, this is actually everything in the book. So everything you got in the comics, unlike the actual trades where it literally would go from, you'd get 6 issues, but like the Walking Dead ones, you got nothing sort of breaking up the issues for it. It was just one straight story straight through. You got that with the trades originally. With this one, it's got the extra stories in it. It's got all the letters pages in it. It's got everything that came in the comics in these. So this is the way I'm going to be getting this book. It's collecting issues 14 to 24 and issue 25, which was the full-color double-sized anniversary issue. Now, if you know this book, it is a black-and-white book, so if you're not interested in black-and-white books, you won't want to get this. But to be honest, you miss out on so much good stuff when you don't get the black-and-white stuff. as it says here, comparison titles, films such as Mad Max and Scanners, TV shows like Lost, I don't see that one, but, you know, this is something I like. It's set in, as you could guess, in a post-apocalyptic world where basically they had the Big Wet come. Now, the Big Wet literally wiped out the world, turned it into a desert-type world. Every once in a while, there'll be floods or something like that. As I said, Mad Max is probably the best way to see how this world's working. So if you're interested in something like that, if you like that type of thing, this is the way to buy this book. If you're not getting the issues, buy it in these editions. This is what I'm getting now, written by Anthony Johnson. The Christopher Mitten did the artwork for it, and you've got Ben Templesmith does the covers for it. So how can you go wrong? Go and pick it up. Okay then, well that's it for me this month. I shall talk to you all next month, and yeah, catch me on Twitter or see me on the forums. Okay, bye.
I don't need to rehash what Damian just said. I'm in the exact same boat as he was. I kind of got interested in Wasteland a little bit into the run, like maybe after, you know, 8 or 9 issues had come out, had been completely unable to find the early issues of the series. So I picked up the first apocalyptic edition, and it's great, as he said, because it has all the material. So I'm definitely going to be picking up this one and following the series in subsequent apocalyptic editions every year or so as they collect 12 issues at a time.
Makes sense.
Okay, we got another clip. Let's listen to that.
Hello, this is Drew Woodworth from the Killer Comics Podcast with my fourth and last pick of the month. The book is from Red 5 Comics on page 315. It's called We Kill Monsters, the trade paperback. It's 184 pages for $14.95. This collects the 6-issue limited series, We Kill Monsters. It's basically the story of these two auto mechanic brothers. One of them happens to be sort of a auto mechanic genius where he can build like contraptions out of just spare parts and make all sorts of neat little things. But anyway, they happen to just be driving home one night and they get attacked by a monster. Well, they fight it off and one of the brothers gets bit, and so his arm basically grows into like a monster arm. Well, it starts dying, and it turns out that these monsters are all over their small little town, and so they're basically running around trying to kill these monsters. Now the brother with the monster arm, he needs monster juice. So he has to go around and kill these monsters and then drink their juice to keep his arm alive, basically. And there's a love interest, and there's some little twists and turns throughout it. But basically, it's like an old, or it's basically like a kind of B-movie monster movie that you might have grown up on. You know, it's, if you've ever seen Slither, or like Critters, or any of those movies like that. It's just kind of a fun, sort of light, crazy romp. It's got some violence, but it's not real gruesome or anything. The art's pretty cartoony. So, it's just a real fun read. Red 5 Comics, they also publish Atomic Robo, so they have a pretty good track record of doing some pretty good stuff. So if this sounds like it might be up your alley, you might check it out. It's also available on the iPad, so there's like the first issue, I believe, is free. So if you're kind of interested, you might check it out, download the first issue, read it if you like it. You might think about picking up this trade paperback. So give it a try.
Yeah, Red 5 tends to do some pretty good stuff. Now, on the next page, 316 from Titan Comics, we've got Torchwood number 1. We've got a 45% discount through DCBS on this. And it's written by John Barrowman, who is Captain Jack, the leader of Torchwood on the BBC series. This character spun out of Doctor Who. He was kind of one of the companions during the second season and has shown up a few times since. Fun character, and basically this is kind of continuing the story, I think, after the Children of Earth stuff, and presumably before the upcoming Stars 10-issue series that they're going to do. Stars is who's currently doing the Spartacus series. So good to see that they've picked up the property. I'm a big fan of the Torchwood stuff. It's kind of a Doctor Who in a Vertigo-ish kind of a manner, if you will. It's funny, because Doctor Who went from being off the air to having Doctor Who to spinning out both Torchwood and then the Sarah Jane Adventures, which was kind of the younger aged version of the stuff. I enjoy all three series, and certainly looking forward to Torchwood becoming a comic. They're doing 2 stories in this, and it's going to go, I think, 5 issues. This is stuff that I think had shown up originally in a Torchwood magazine over in the UK, but they're releasing it just as a comic and stuff here. And the first story is written by John Barrowman, who plays Captain Jack. The second story is by the one of the script editors from the Torchwood series, Gary Russell. So should be good stuff. I'm definitely looking forward to it. All right, we've got another clip, this time from Ian Gowan. Let's listen to that.
Hello, this is Ian Gowan, and this month I am looking forward to a book called The Art of Drew Struzan, and it's on page 336 of the previews catalog. And Drew Struzan is one of the most prolific illustrators of movie posters. He's retired now, but he created posters for big movies like the Star Wars prequels and three Indiana Jones movies, actually did all but the first movie. And he also did posters for the two Hellboy movies. And I think anyone who's seen a movie has probably seen a Drew Struzan poster. He works in traditional media like airbrush and paint, unlike most posters nowadays that are created in Photoshop. This book is going to have a lot of black and white sketches and how he has turned them into final color posters. I think that's really interesting to see how an artist does that art process. This book will be published by Titan, who also produced the Watching the Watchmen book, which I've seen and is a good quality book. This book is scheduled for release on August 25th, and it retails for $39.95. DCBS has it at 30% off for $27.97. And I know it's an expensive book, but I think it would be a great addition to a quality art book collection. Thanks, Bob and John.
So I will add that this is probably a new edition of this book, because I actually have this book already from a previous edition, so I don't know if they've like added some additional stuff to it, but as Ian says, it's very good. Another set of posters a lot of people might recognize, Drew Struzan did the Back to the Future posters for all 1, 2, and 3. It's a beautiful book, though. I've got the hardcover of it, and if you like those kind of movie posters, just classic stuff, and there's just text talking about it as well, and just lots of samples of his art. Really nice book.
And our final clip of the month. This time, actually, we're in the... it's funny, we've got more clips from the book and magazine and stuff section than we had for Marvel, but let's listen to this one.
My final selection for the month comes from page 338, the books and magazine section in previews. It's the Classic Marvel Figurine Collection magazine number 131, The Grim Reaper. I don't know how many of you folks collect action figures or any statues, that kind of thing. However, I believe this is the first time the Grim Reaper has ever been offered in any form. If you're not familiar with these lead figures, they're actually quite nice. They take up very little shelf space, they're highly detailed, and they should last a while. The magazines that come with them also offer a nice synopsis of the character, where they started at, what changes they've been through, and where they are currently. Most of these magazines are very up to date. If you don't have a Grim Reaper figure and you're a collector such as myself, this may be your only chance to get one. So I'd suggest you get it here. Now back to the guys.
So I've got all of these, and they are quite the addiction. The Marvel ones that are coming out here, Grim Reaper is, what number is he? 131, and they've had some specials along the way, which are kind of larger size ones, like the Hulk. Currently this month, the Ronan the Accuser is in there. He's a larger one. So they've probably done about 150 of these figures, and you've seen my collection of these, John.
Oh, yeah.
I've got all of them, and I'm getting the DC ones now, too. But Eagle Moss does a superb job on these things. They stand about maybe 2.5 inches tall. They're cast in lead, so, I mean, they're not something that you want to,
chew on tasty.
Or anything like that. You don't want to chew on them. But they're painted, right? So it's not like the lead is exposed. I mean, you'd really need to start gnawing on the thing to get through the paint and get at the actual lead. But, I mean, if you've got little kids, I don't think you want to, like, who put things in their mouths. You don't want these things laying around, But they're really nice collectibles, very detailed. The paint jobs on them are beautiful, and as was pointed out, that magazine that comes with each one is a really nice, concise description of the characters. Got a little timeline of the character, key comic book appearances, all kinds of stuff. Really nice deal. And DCBS usually has these at 25% off, which is, you know, I've not yet seen them at a comic shop less than full price. Although sometimes at a convention you can find them on sale for, you know, like $5 or $6. And, you know, anyone who does that and they see a character they like, you know, you could do far worse than to pick one of these up. They're really nice. So moving from that, we've got our last pick of the month. And this is just something that I saw at the way back end of previews that I thought was cool and that a lot of people might have missed, because I like The Blackest Night so much. If you go all the way back to page 424 of the previews catalog, probably as far back as we've ever gone. You know, we might have gone a couple of times. We usually don't make it this far back into the collectible and novelty section. But we have a DC Comics Blackest Night 7-piece magnet set. And what's cool about these 7 magnets is each one has got a hand with the power ring and the symbol of one of the 7 cores, but it's got the entire power ring oath for that core printed on the magnet. So, you know, if you want to, you know, have a place to get all those power ring oaths at hand and not have to pull that issue of Blackest Night out all the time, you know, I know the Green Lantern Oath, and it's easy to know the Orange Lantern Oath, which is just mine, but the other ones, I still am not completely familiar with, so I'm going to be getting these, and I'll slap these on some metal thing close at hand. So, little expensive, about $18, but, you know, it's a, you know, you buy a novelty magnet at any kind of shop, and they're going to be about, you know, $3 a piece or so. So it's within the realm, it's a reasonable price for what it is. But, you know, just wanted to point it out to people if they have not seen this before, because it's something that can easily slip your notice.
Yeah, that one's tempting. It's one of those things, if this were a lighter month, that would be on my list already, but as it is, it's one of the many things falling into that maybe category, and I've got just a ton of stuff this time around in that area. There's a lot of gaming stuff that I found interesting this time around. They've got, what all did they have in that area? They had the DC Heroes Handbook Core Rulebook. They had some Champions stuff. They had the Smallville RPG Rulebook. I mean, there's probably another $100 or $2 I could probably toss onto my order this month if I'm not careful. But it's already above where I'd like it to be, so I got to think about some of those things, like those magnets and stuff like that.
Yeah. Now that's, you know, where I'm at with those Eagle Moss figures. You buy all those. I mean, they're not cheap. They come in at, you know, about, you know, the retail price on the Marvel ones is $12 on the regular ones. So they're $9. The larger ones, usually anywhere from $24 to $36 a piece, depending on how big. So, I mean, you can easily drop $100 a month, and, you know, like this month, my retail cost on those figures is $100, and, you know, which makes my discounted price $75. So
yeah. Now, does Eagle Moss also do those Star Wars ones they've got on, like?
Yes, they do.
Oh, because that R2-D2 is very tempting. That one, I may have to get that one.
And they also have a Buffy series that I've seen. I've seen Buffy and Angel and a couple others, you know, people who are big fans of Buffy, and hasn't hit the U.S. yet, but I believe they also have a Lord of the Rings series.
Wow, I'm surprised those things aren't listed in previews.
Well, I mean, they're English. They're out in the U.K., so they don't always hit the U.S. until maybe a year after they've been in the U.K.
Well, and it took a while for the Marvel stuff, because for a while they were doing 4 a month, 2 that were old issues, that, and then the new
right.
stuff they were doing. So, yeah, I can see that. Expensive month for me. It's like $912.69 at retail after discount, $566.18. Got like 208 items, I think, on the list, and a lot of things that I'd like to add. I got a couple of big-ticket items this time around, or big-ticket for me, a couple of hardcovers, trades, or whatever. Obviously not like the busts and things that you tend to be picking up, but still. A lot of stuff this time around.
Yeah, I had 217 items, which is actually quite a few items for me. I usually come in around 206, so But actually not as expensive as, you know, some months. Well, a lot, but not, you know, under $1,000.
Obviously, we found a lot that we were interested in. Hopefully you guys did too. Again, we have an open submission policy on these episodes. We like to hear from as many people as possible, as many viewpoints as possible, and about as many items as possible. Because there's something out there for everybody. There are a couple of things around that I missed that we talked about on the previous teleconference. We do those typically on the first Friday of every month. Check the forum. We'll have when we're doing the next one. And it's open invitation. We do it on Skype. Basically, we go cover to cover, not quite item by item by any means, but we go for a couple hours and just talk about comics, movies, whatever else comes up in the course of conversation. And again, you know, we use that night as kind of the cutoff point for when we have submissions for these episodes. But like I said before, we like hearing from other people. That's how we find out about things we would have missed.
Right. And it's likely that the next one will be on Friday, July 9th.
Yeah. So anything else? Or does that pretty much wrap it up?
That wraps it for me.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.